Blog Talk Radio. Cloudy day in New York, and I don't know how everybody else is, but it's okay. I had a decent weekend. Just even had my daughter over this time, helping me doing some stuff around the place for once. What's going on by you down there?
Well, it's a beautiful day down here in Nashville. Yesterday it was almost 70 degrees. It's a nice sunny day today, so I have a lot of stuff to do today too.
You
so.
Need to do some stuff, and that's
exactly
what it is. Stuff. I mean, you know,
that's our new catchword for a lot of crap. But now it's
yes,
stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, really, you know, if you think about it, I mean, this week I'm just trying to get things. My TV died, so my daughter came over, her boyfriend was over, and I said, okay, listen, just double check that. You know, I didn't do something stupid, and it's a you know, you see a light on, but there's nothing's there. You know, it's just
the
gone.
Light was on, but nobody was home. Oh.
That's right. So it looks like I'm gonna have to go and go get a new TV set. Though I, you know, wish I wasn't spending it, but I need to. And I was watching everything like on small screen, and I don't want to watch anything on small screen. Like I was watching the Oscars. You know, I was watching the different dresses and
the dresses were gorgeous this year. Gorgeous.
I saw, you know, the one my favorite ones were definitely the midnight blue. Those because mm-hmm. that's my color. I love that, and it was just beautiful. I mean, it was nice to see Whoopi's. I couldn't believe when I saw Whoopi in a dress. You know, and it's been years since I've seen her in one. And apparently, it was designed based on Bette Davis's. What was that movie?
All About Eve. That,
yes.
That one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that dress was based on that design when it was designed for her. She looked fabulous, and her daughter Alex. And then, you know, you saw all these new, young, beautiful girls that were just wearing that yellow one. The girl of the one from that movie, the Danish girl.
Yeah.
Oh,
hers
beautiful
was pretty.
Yellow.
I thought Kerry Washington's dress was stunning. The black bustier with the white. I thought that was nice. Jennifer Lawrence's was
missed
beautiful.
I taped the first part because I was out eating. What else am I doing? Somebody had taken me out. So I'm going to watch that first bit, and then I'm going to. But I watched a majority of it. It was very interesting. I mean,
well,
you know
what I think? I think that, you know, we were all prepared because of all the stuff that went on. And I think that Chris Rock handled himself well, but the Oscars are always way too long, May. I'm sorry. And after a while, the point was just driven home so much that to me it became pointless. It got old. It started to misfire. And at the end of the day, and I'm going to say this, diversity isn't just a black and white issue. There's many,
yes.
many other minorities. And when the group
I
that
agree.
Cries the loudest.
Myself,
yep.
I was just thinking. Yep. I said, well, we're talking about black
Look
and white. I know
Chinese
that they're saying,
people. Yeah.
Right.
You
but
know,
we've been around forever, too.
yeah, when the group that cries the loudest, when that group is the only one being listened to, then the imbalance just shifts and nothing gets resolved. Okay? Yeah. It just, you know, But in all that being said, I don't think there were any surprises. I think they decided this year.
I'll tell you what the one surprise was, though. I thought the one surprise was Mark Rylance.
But you know what? He deserved the award. His performance in Bridge of Spies was the stuff that Oscars should represent. Okay,
yes.
A totally.
I thought that was.
I mean, it was like he. You really believed he was this man. And
well, it was fabulous, and then the other thing was, like I said, I don't think they thought the girl that won from the Danish girl would win either. You know, there were all these little things. Yes, Leonardo DiCaprio won, and I'm glad for him. And, you know, he apparently he – I didn't see it, but it definitely deserved it. I just sort of – I love his speech. He talked about climate, which affects everyone, not just one group. You know, I'm a big environment, and he's a big environmental person. So it was just – but he was so succinct. It was not like rambling. He was very on target.
Well, he's been practicing that speech for like, you know, this was his sixth nomination. I think that, you know, it's great that he won. I do think that Bryan Cranston's performance was the performance of the year in Trumbo. But
I got to tell you something, though. Everybody that had seen it, and I listened to a lot of the people that were out there, they all said, you know, they're not doubting Bryan Cranston, obviously. They said when you see all the movies, all one, you go, you're amazed at what Leonardo did, you know, and that whole thing. And then, of course, I saw the bear this morning, the guy who plays the bear.
Yeah.
Because that's not a real
bear. I don't
know.
You know what? I appreciate the filmmaking more from a filmmaker standpoint, the cinematography and the direction. Yeah, he was wonderful in it, but I'm not sure that any other actor who had the chops to do what he did couldn't have pulled it off as well.
No, that's what
I'm not denying his performance.
I know,
you know,
but when you listen to the people that they said no, did you see the movie?
Yeah, I did. I saw all of them.
Okay,
I saw all the Oscar nominees because you know my ex-husband's a
that's
all
true,
the screeners.
Yeah.
So,
but what I'm saying,
you know,
yeah,
I mean,
part of it.
I'm glad for him in that he's had a long career, and he was truly, truly delighted with winning. And his speech was really good, nice, and I'm glad for him. But
I don't know if everybody could have done that because I'm not too sure. I disagree with you, but okay, let's move on because we've got a guest. But I got to tell you, I just looked up on the screen. Now Cosby's trying to get the what was her name? Dickinson. What's her name?
Janice
from
Dickinson.
They're trying to get her defamation thing dropped.
Please.
Yeah, it's not gonna. Please. I mean, he's trying.
Well,
every
you know
week
what? I don't know if there will ever be any resolution with that. I think that eventually it'll all be settled out of the public
I don't
eye
think so.
And. I don't know. I mean, he.
I don't think so.
They made some major mistakes, though, May, because if indeed they were not supposed to release that information and they did, he wins, and that's the stickler right there. And it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. I believe the girl.
I understand what you're going, but I understand where you're going with it. But the judge, when he looked at, there were little things in there that sort of already blew it somewhere else. The only reason, because he felt that there was enough that it was now that the reason why it went the way it did. So he looked at it. It wasn't like he just said, "Oh, okay, yeah, let's release it." Apparently, when he was doing it, there was other reasons that sort of negated the point of why it was behind closed door type of thing.
Right.
So that was
but
why
it
was released.
But it won't be the first time somebody got away. With a crime, let me cite Casey Anthony. Let me cite O.J. Simpson. You know, it'll be interesting.
But he didn't get away. He didn't get away with it in the end. But the thing is, he didn't get away with it in the end. The civil suit is huge. But he lost out because a lot of people won't touch him. He is not going to be touched, no matter.
Oh
what.
No, without a doubt. But I mean, Bill Cosby is a very rich man, and I do think it'll all be settled out of court. I think he'll have to pay everybody off. And he's finished.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think so. I disagree with you on this one. So there's not many times, but I disagree with you on this one. I totally.
Well, you know what?
The story
will unfold.
There's too many angry. No, because there's too many. This is a time of where women are coming into where the reality, where people didn't before. Yes. And they didn't accept it before. They didn't settle with him before. And. You know what? A lot of these women are angry, and I don't think they're going to be a settlement.
Well,
so.
A lot of them are angry, but not all of them brought lawsuits against him until this point now either. So
well, there
it's
couldn't
going to
be. That was the whole thing. They're slowly, believe me, they're going to be slowly doing it, and I could see this. And I hope they win.
Well, I think
there's
it'll
too
be
many,
interesting
too
to
many
see how
women.
It shakes out.
We'll see. I hope they win. I really want.
Well,
them to
I mean, I believe the women. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
I believe the women. I do believe the women. So I don't. It's not. That's not the issue. That's not the point I'm making. The point
we don't know. And like anything else in life, we don't know what's going to happen. So let's get on with our guest. We got a guest.
We do. And this particular guest has drummed up a lot of interest with our Beatlemaniacs, the people who just it doesn't get smaller, it just seems to get bigger, and the age range from little kids to, you know, the elderly, with this fascination with these four lads, the Beatles. And his story, our guest today, goes back to 1963 in a little burg called Benton, Illinois. And it has to do with the local VFW hall. And without further ado, we are welcoming author Jim Kirkpatrick. He has a book called Before He Was Fab, and this is a little tale about a little young man named George Harrison. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, Benton, I mean, we have to go straight to it because everybody, all of our faithful listeners, and we have a lot, you know, this is probably a story that a lot of them have never heard before.
Yeah. It is, and when I started my project around the time of the millennium, my goal was to basically preserve history. And, of course, being a Beatle fan, it made it all that much more interesting. But I thought it was very unique that of all places in the world that a Beatle would visit before they became really famous was Benton, Illinois. Benton's a community of around 8,000 people, and at the time of George's visit, the primary source of employment in that area was coal mining. And that's how his sister Louise and her husband ended up in Benton. He was a mechanical design engineer, and he got a position at a local coal company. And that was in March of 1963, and of course George visited Benton in September of that year. A lot of interesting firsts, I think, that happened during his visit. You know, he played with a local group, the Four Vests, had a dance in El Dorado, Illinois, at the El Dorado VFW. And he actually bought a guitar at Fenton Music in Mount Vernon, Illinois, and I didn't really know until the last couple of years that he actually used that guitar when they recorded I Want to Hold Your Hand. But he
Well, it would make sense on that level, mm-hmm. because they were all poor, and
right.
they would use whatever instrument that they've already had in their possession to
right.
carry on to all their gigs. And then they only, as when they could afford the next one, is when they would either trade or buy additional. That would sell
it's
and
interesting.
Buy.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think George paid approximately $400 for the guitar. It was a Rickenbacker 425 solid body
mm-hmm.
guitar.
Right.
And that guitar a year or so ago sold on auction for, I think, something like $650,000. So that was quite an investment, you know, to say
well,
the least.
You know what it is? But when you buy something at the time, and I'm just saying
mm-hmm.
at the time, you don't think about, oh, I'm buying this for an investment. Because back in the day, you know, it's like the things I have now, they go, do you know how much it's worth? I wasn't buying it for that. You know, I bought it because
right,
I wanted
right.
it, you know. So we don't
right.
think about it because now we're in that age of the memorabilia. Oh, do you know how
exactly.
much it is?
Well, of course, too, guys, let's face it. None of these four men at that point ever dreamed they would become very possibly the biggest icons in the history of music. So, when you don't have that. But what I'm thinking of, Jim, is, okay, he appeared at the VFW, and then a few months later on Ed Sullivan, some old geezer from Benton, Illinois, goes, Myrtle, isn't that boy that was playing down at the VFW? Like,
exactly.
I think that is crazy.
And I was,
how did you come across
fortunate.
This story? How did you
yeah.
how did you discover the story?
Well,
I mean, is it
back in the mid 1990s? I worked in a governmental office, and there was an effort to tear down the house that Louise Harrison Caldwell had lived in, because it was next to a state office building and they needed additional space for parking. And a person from Springfield, Illinois, by the name of Bob Bartell, found out about this, and he came to Benton and started an effort to save the house. And at that time, a lot of the history of George Harrison's visit had pretty much been forgotten. And then he got the support of George's sister Louise, and she actually came back to Southern Illinois and led an effort to save the house. And it was at that time, while attending those meetings, I found out all these interesting stories about how a local radio station in West Frankfort, Illinois, WFRX, was one of the first radio stations in the United States to play Beatle music. The fact mm-hmm. that he bought this guitar in Mount Vernon, and even a more amazing, his first performance in the United States at the El Dorado VFW. I think Louise put it very succinctly when she said there were approximately 100 people at the dance that night, and most of the people really weren't paying any attention to the music. They were eating and drinking, and once in a while they'd get up and dance and then sit down. And it was kind of interesting because George originally didn't want to play with the group because he said he really wasn't that familiar with their songs, but they kind of played a trick on him. They said the lead guitarist at that time, a guy named Kenny Welch, had to step out, and they needed George to fill in. And when he started to perform, Louise said, all of a sudden, it was like somebody threw a switch in the room. The difference was that dramatic. When they were no longer paying any attention, all of a sudden, all the focus was on George's guitar playing and singing. And it was at that point that she said, if he can make that much difference by himself, what would the four of them be like? And that was George Harrison's first performance. And amazingly enough, of course, he did some Chuck Berry numbers like Roll Over Beethoven and Johnny Be Good and Carl Perkins.
Right.
But also he wanted to do country songs like Your Cheatin' Heart by Hank Williams.
Well, you know, it's funny because when you say that, Liverpool being so close to Ireland, to Dublin.
Right.
And all that, in Ireland, the most popular music is country music.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. I found that out when I was in Ireland. They go, oh, the top music there, you would think it's rock and roll. It isn't. It's country music. That's
crazy.
There
were a lot of country singers like Farron Young and, of course, Hank Williams and people like that that had a lot of influence in early rock and roll, too.
Yeah.
It seems to me, you know, this is like one of those things now. Now in Benton, did they make a little, like, museum and stuff to talk about? Is her house still standing because of all of this story? Is that
the
point?
The house is still standing, and at one time it was a bed and breakfast. But because of the economically depressed environment, with a lot of layoffs, the coal mines had closed. Unfortunately, the bed and breakfast couldn't survive, but the house is still there, and there are still people that come from all around that just want to see the house that George Harrison stayed in.
Oh, that's good.
Do they have a plaque at the VFW that says George Harrison played here?
No, I think that was in the works, but 2 years ago, the 50th anniversary of George's visit, which would have been going on 3 years, the Benton Historical Society and the Illinois State Historical Society and a group of us got together, and a historical marker was put up in Benton downtown that marked the 50th anniversary of his visit. And Louise came back and was at the dedication. So we had a really big crowd that day, a lot of people, a lot of Beatle fans, a lot of music, and people that really appreciated George's visit. You know, it's kind of interesting when he was at the VFW, apparently as he was leaving, a guy came up to him and he said, you know, boy, if you learn how to handle that, you might go places, you know. And of course, the local newspaper in January of 64, before the Ed Sullivan show, they put a kind of slant on the lead on the story and said, Southern Illinois man and parlays it into success, which was kind of like a stretch of the imagination.
Oh, that's hilarious. I just think that these kind of things, you know, May, you get it all the time. People are always surprised that John Lennon was just an ordinary guy when he wasn't the Beatle, you know, or John Lennon. You know, they had other interests besides just themselves, and usually it was like really out there as far as, what was his favorite, May, that you told me that was like, blimey. I would never have picked it to be a favorite of John Lennon's as an artist. Who was it? I can't remember.
What do you mean as a? You mean an artist
that he
liked?
Admired? Yeah, that he admired. It was like not Jimmy Pickens.
God.
It was like somebody like that, you know. And
well,
I was
you
like,
know what's
oh.
really funny? This is to tell you, he loved the song when he heard it, and this is you know, just when we're going back to the country sound, when we were, somebody played him a record, one of our own friends played a record, he goes, you'll love this, and he heard it, and it was the song by Billy Swan, I Can Help.
Yeah.
And
as
that helped.
Fact, Billy Swan was from our area.
He was from
Cape Girardeau,
right.
Missouri.
So he, which was written by, you ready for or I forgot who wrote that song. Was it he that wrote? I don't remember, but whatever it was, that John loved that song, and it was he who kept plugging it on, you know, whenever he played as a DJ.
Mm-hmm.
And that song came back to life and became number one, was because John was going, you got to listen to this song, you know?
Yeah.
And we did that, and because the record was not a number one record. That was the same as Ann Peebles, I Can't Stand the Rain. It had dropped off the chart. It only hit like 90-something. Never made it past that. John picks up the record, that, and then afterwards was Billy Swan. Picked up both of those records while they were only like either practically off the chart, and he just brought them back to life, and they all both became number one. So as I'm saying that, I just remembered, you know, when we were doing it. But that's that, you know, that country sound. They loved it. And I mean, Ringo is more of the country lover of music than the other boys.
Bucky the Blues, and,
yeah. Yeah, he loved Bocuse Blues, the whole thing. And where John was more he would love, you know, you're talking about the killer Jerry Lee Lewis, and you know he loved Elvis before he went into the army. He loved, you know, that whole thing in that raw form, you know, early on. You know, I see Jerry Lee Lewis doing Breathless. You know, that whole reckless time. You know, because they were Teddy Boys. They were there.
Right. Yeah. So. I think it's interesting you mentioned John. And when George bought his guitar in Mount Vernon, originally it was a Starburst, kind of like red gold, or Sunburst, I should say.
Right.
And he asked the owner of the store if he had one in black. And I guess the owner said no. He said, but if you want it black, I can make it black for you. So not really sure whether or not he actually sent it off or did it himself, but it was refinished in black. But originally it was a Sunburst, red and yellow. And people say the reason he wanted the guitar to be black was so that it would match John Lennon's guitar.
Ah.
And, of course, the guitar he bought was a Rickenbacker 425.
Mm-hmm.
And Rickenbackers were, I guess, the guitars that they were interested in at the time. And,
right,
of course, John Hall, the president of Rickenbacker, later gave George a 12-string Rickenbacker, and he
mm-hmm.
incorporated that into a lot of the Beatles songs.
Yes, the twelve strings. Yeah, they have a nice sound. So
right.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I mean, when they would find a guitar, because, you know, again, it's like shoes for women. You know, you love your pair of shoes. You like
yeah.
one. You just got to keep a purse. You know, that's where it goes. You know, it's the same thing. Men who are even friends, even girlfriends who are musicians. I mean, my girlfriend Roberta, you know, or any of them, they love a certain guitar because they love that sound. Or June Millington from Fanny. I mean, yes, they have a sound that they want, and if they can get it, and then you try to, depending on the song, you want a different sound, so it's a different guitar. So when the guys went out to play the songs, that's why they're always switching. If nobody understands, you can't use the same guitar for every sound you want.
Oh, okay. You know,
right.
I just learned something, because I thought they switched because either the strings got loose or, you know, it got hot. Okay, that's how silly I am, Jim. I just learned something today. Thank you.
Well, George, like I said, George actually used this guitar early on, and when he went back to England, after his visit, they went on a tour of Sweden, and he actually used this guitar. And it was at that time that they were recording the With the Beatles, or in the United States, Meet the Beatles album. And like I said, it just came out a couple of years ago that he actually used that guitar on I Want to Hold Your Hand, and also with another song called This Boy.
Right.
And that's what made the guitar so valuable.
Well, fantastic.
Wow.
Hey, listen, Jim, I'm so glad you came on our show. We're just winding down now in time.
No problem.
And no, I just said, you know, it's great to hear about, you know, what Benton, Illinois has been put on the map, you know, with you having the Beatles.
Right.
A Beetle visiting there, you know, so
it's like
great.
George Washington slept here. So, okay, so now, Jim, if somebody
exactly,
wants to
yeah.
find the book, where can they go? Where can they go?
The book was originally printed by Cache River Press. They were a local publisher, and it was later sold to Quick Publishing in St. Louis. But the
okay.
best way to get the book is on Amazon. On
Amazon? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's called great. Before He Was Fab. Jim Kirkpatrick.
George
Jim,
Harrison's
thanks for
First American Business.
George Harrison's
mm-hmm.
This story is just adorable. It should be a movie. I'm hoping you're working on that. And thanks for coming to the show. We really loved having you.
Thank you for
it's
coming on.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Take
care. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye
now.
Yeah, I need a story like that for my farm. Like, who could I say stayed here? Come on.
Oh, Jesus. Well, we'll have to think about this. But anyway, we're down to the last second. I'm just saying I'm going to be in Syracuse University in April. I'm going to be in Monmouth University on the 19th of March. So there you go. So if anybody's in Jersey, I'm just doing a talk with a bunch of songwriters out on March 19th.
And it always becomes interesting because it always does lead back to the Beatles. However, people need to realize you also had your own career in music. And, yeah. And, you know, it's a herstory that needs to be told. So
we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yep. Eventually, so, darling.
Yes, eventually.
All right, pipsqueaks. So we are
okay.
We're running out of time. We'll be back next week. But the book is Before He Was Fab. The author is
yes.
Jim Kirkpatrick.
And I'll be
and
meeting you in a few. Yeah, maybe.
Yes.
And I'll be talking to everyone soon.
Miss May Pang, and I'm Cynthia Nielsen, and you've been listening to Dinner Specials on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody. Yeah.